Donald Trump has a platform that you guys are dreaming about. He is taking every step that
fraud.
The AFL-CIO has ever recommended for a president
fraud.
To take, and you are, well, that may be, but we're going to find out, and your workers, see, here's the point. Your workers don't believe he's
be
a fraud.
Your guy,
they believe
I'm
that
trying
he
to follow your thinking here,
guy.
Sir. You just said it may be that Trump's a fraud. What did you mean by that?
I'm just saying, here's what I mean. Trump just says he's a fraud. I say, well, we're going to find out. My view is your workers don't think he's a fraud. I don't think he's a fraud, which is why I'm supporting him.
So the idea was economic. Elect this guy, and he's a genius at business. He's a billionaire. Elect this guy, and it's all going to be about economics and jobs and raising wages and just everything. Go, go, go. Because that's one of the things that he ran on. But the thing that he ran on, even harder than that, which wasn't discussed a lot in the media, was this horribly racist rhetoric. No matter that he did not win the popular vote. The election is decided by 70,000 votes between three states. But if you ask the average voter, they believe that this horribly racist rhetoric is one of the things that actually helped him win. Telling it like it is, not being politically correct. I saw a tweet this week after Roseanne Barr was fired from her top-rated TV show, her top-rated racist reboot. I saw a tweet that said, who would have thought that saying something horribly racist on Twitter would cause her to lose her job? Was it not racist enough? Perhaps instead she could have said something that was so racist that it would have made her president. Where we're at right now, economically, is okay. Things are kind of flat. But we're learning the real-world effects of the tax policy that was put forward. But we'll get to that in a minute. But there's also this underlying thing that's really brewing that is not getting a lot of attention. Part of the reason the Klan wore masks was so that they could go back to their regular lives. Now, go back to their regular lives during the day. They put on the hoods at night and they terrorized black people. And that's what it was always about. And then during the day, they'd sort of mix in with the rest of the crowd, being racist, but not so racist that they get all murdery. And now the Klan is back. And it's back in a big way. And it's back because they believe that they are welcome back. So much so that in Charlottesville, they didn't even bother wearing the white hoods. They walked down the street in a surveillance society so that everybody could see their faces. No more shame. And it's because they believe that the world is with them. Look, their guy is in the White House. They believe that the world is with them now, or at least the United States is with them, a white United States. And the belief, as erroneous as it is, Donald Trump won with this racist rhetoric. They go, oh, no, it was economic. Or what about the people that aren't racist? What about them? He's not doing great economically. We'll get to that in a minute. But the whole racial thing, since he won with that, there's a lot of other folks that are saying, you know what? I bet I could win with that. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Michael Williams. This is a real ad.
Hi. I'm Michael Williams, and boy, do we have some exciting news to you. We have our bus tour ready to go, but it's not going to be one of those pansy political bus tours. We've got the deportation bus. That's right, you heard me, the Michael Williams deportation bus. If you want to find out where we're coming, go to deportationbus.com. We're going to implement my 287G deportation plan that's going to fill this bus with illegals to send them back to where they came from. We're not just going to track them and watch them roam around our state. We're going to put them on this bus and send them home. Go to deportationbus.com and find out where we're going to be. See you there. If you're as tired as I am with politicians that do nothing but talk, and you want to see this bus filled with illegals, vote Michael Williams on May 22nd.
I encourage you to look up the ad, because when he walks around, towards the end of the ad, he walks around to the back of the, and it's a gigantic bus that just has the words deportation bus written on the side of it. This is our lives now. And then on the back of the bus, when he walks onto the back of the bus, if you're sick of politicians like me, and on the back of the bus, it says, caution, this bus is full of rapists and murderers and child molesters. But at the bottom, on the lower part of the door, it says, next stop, Mexico. So we don't have to wonder at all what's happening there. And then there's this from Newsweek. The headline, Virginia newspaper runs KKK recruitment flyer in full on front page. This has been happening in Idaho also. Idaho has a whole lot of white supremacists. And they do the thing where they, you know, they'll go around and they'll pin their DVDs or they'll take a flyer and they'll put it in a bag of rocks and throw it in people's driveways at night, and then people will wake up and next day they'll go out and there'll be a flyer sitting in their driveway that says that the KKK is watching. Super duper creepy stuff. The KKK is a full-on terrorist group. So the Westmoreland News, the ones that ran the full KKK ad on their front page, are taking some heat for it. But something is happening. And these folks aren't hiding anymore because they believe. This is all the president. They believe that their time in white America has finally arrived. And there's a slew of these ads running thousands of times right now, just all across the nation.
I'm Brian Kemp. I'm so conservative, I blow up government spending. I own guns that no one's taken away. My chainsaw's ready to rip up some regulations. I got a big truck, just in case I need to round up criminal illegals and take them home myself. Yep, I just said that. I'm Brian Kemp. If you want a politically incorrect conservative, that's me.
Politically incorrect. And remember, politically correct means not racist. Politically incorrect means you've got no problem using racial language. Things get worse before they get better. And so what we see with all the racist guys, they call themselves conservative. There's, ever since the Republicans decided to be no longer the party of Lincoln and decided to be the anti-civil rights party after LBJ signed the Civil Rights Act, once the Republicans started to be the anti-civil rights party, they've always to some degree been associated with this kind of racism. A lot of it was dog whistle, not so out like it is. But now that it's out, the unfortunate thing, and I mean this when I say this, the unfortunate thing is that the very thin line that used to lie between white supremacy and conservatism, or racism and conservatism, that line is being erased this year because white America believes that their time has finally arrived. And as I say, things get worse before they get better. They're not hiding under hoods anymore. They're not just hiding behind keyboards, computer keyboards anymore. They're out. And there's good with that and there's bad with that. The point of showing themselves is terrorism. I've talked about it here on the show. The kids are coming over the border with their parents. They're escaping violence in their countries. What would Jesus do? Clearly he would detain them and tear the families apart. Because, you know, Jesus, that's terrorism as well. Every bit of what they're doing is terrorism. So there's the bad part. And of course, they're probably your neighbor. There's a bunch of people in my neighborhood, and I don't live in deep red broke dick Mississippi. I live right next to Portland. And there are Confederate flags that proudly wave in my neighborhood. There's the bad. So where's the good? The good is, now that these folks are so out and they are getting so much attention, the headline from The Guardian, after Charlottesville, how a slew of lawsuits pinned down the far right. Quoting here, Heather Heyer, who would have celebrated her 33rd birthday this past Tuesday, was mowed down by a car last summer while protesting against neo-Nazis and white supremacists in Charlottesville, Virginia. Last week, a courthouse a short distance away, lawyers sought to persuade a federal judge that organizers of the far-right rally should be held accountable. The case, which would leave prominent white nationalists such as Richard Spencer facing ruin, exemplifies a broader legal offense aimed at throwing sand in the gears of the alt-right movement, which is nothing more than a white supremacist movement. 9 months after the show of strength in Charlottesville, there are signs that the effort is working as hate groups hemorrhage cash and are banished from social media platforms and are turning on each other in vicious turf war. So, they're being sued for the things that they're doing. Wait a minute, Melvin, what about their free speech? The government, the First Amendment, covers the government. You can say whatever the hell you want, and the government can't tell you no. But if your speech, your hate speech, leads to violence, that violence causes injury or death, there are no laws that protect you against that. And I've got better news. Alex Jones, king white supremacist, right? So the, sort of the grand wizard of the alt-right, is being sued right now for years. And there's a family that lives here in my neck of the woods that had to move from Newtown because they were getting harassed by these Jones people, by these Alex Jones people. He is now being sued by several families who lost kids in the Sandy Hook tragedy because of the conspiracy theory that he's been promoting that it never happened and that it was a false flag operation and it's nothing more than liberals trying to take our guns. He's being sued now. So it's last year, not last year, I'd say 2015, maybe in 2020, we knew that there are racists out there, but we just didn't know the extent of them. And shame used to cause these folks to hide out. They're not hiding anymore. And they're doing more of this stuff out in the open. They're getting speaking fees for their hate speech. And as their profiles get raised, they're having to pay a heavier and heavier price for what they're doing. Quoting again from the same article, a civil lawsuit accuses 25 individuals and groups of conspiring to plan, promote, and carry out violence in Charlottesville in violation of the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871, which, by the way, is still a law on the books and is now being used almost 130 years later and is now being used to sue the organizers of this rally. And then there's the Unite the Right rally, right? All these rallies that lead to violence that are clearly, they call them free speech rallies that have nothing to do with free speech and have everything to do about white supremacy. People are getting smart. The SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and this is why Fox News hates the Southern Poverty Law Center. They collect money. They collect money and they use it for lawsuits to sue these folks. What about their free speech? They're not suing to take away their speech. They're suing because their speech and their actions are leading to violence. And that violence is sometimes resulting in death. Something interesting happened this week with respect to this particular issue. Roseanne Barr decided to say something insanely racist on Twitter and quickly tried to take it back when somebody pointed out that it was racist, that it was clearly racist. And she got fired. She lost her show. And right away, why didn't Colin Kaepernick? He did. Colin Kaepernick also, but the conflating the two, saying that he's revered for his free, and she's hated for her free. Sure, it's true, but nobody took away their free speech. Both of them said how they feel, how they felt, and both of them paid a pretty heavy price for it. Kaepernick can't get any teams to pick him up, even though he clearly has the talent for football. Barr was dropped not just by ABC, but also by her talent agency, even though she clearly has lots of talent. So more and more, there's a price that's being paid for that kind of speech. Sometimes it ensnares the racists, yay. Sometimes it ensnares the people that are speaking out against racism. And then there's the NFL. And the NFL put it like this, bowing to Donald Trump. They said, you don't have to come out of the locker room if you're not going to stand. If you're on the field, though, you have to stand because no problem there. Taking a knee during the game put a red letter, put a scarlet letter on these players. And being inside the locker room would do exactly the same thing. You'd see the people that don't come out on the field, and all of a sudden, nobody wants to work with them anymore. The silent protest against racism enraged America. Well, it enraged Trump and his base. And this week, he decided to go so far as to say that, look, if you're not going to stand for the flag, and by the way, it has nothing to do with the damn flag. They're protesting police violence against African Americans. The murder of African Americans, where police walk free after murdering unarmed African Americans. And it's not just a fluke. It's happening a lot, over and over and over again. And so when they silently protested, conservatives don't want to, by and large, don't want to face the fact that that's happening. They don't want to admit that that's happening. So instead, they make it all about the flag. Trump decided to say this week, this is the American president, decided to say this week, if you're not going to stand for the flag, you should probably be deported.
Well, I think it's good. You have to stand proudly for the national anthem. Well, you shouldn't be playing. You shouldn't be there. Maybe you shouldn't be in the country. You have to stand proudly for the national anthem. And the NFL owners did the right thing.
There was an article from CNN Tech a little while back. The headline, YouTube ran ads from hundreds of brands on extremist channels. Extremist channels on YouTube are being pulled down by Google. Extremist pages on Facebook are being pulled down. More and more 4chan is beginning to take down more of this stuff. But not before these ads ran on the, and this is all stuff that you would have heard of, Cisco, Amazon, Mozilla, LinkedIn, Netflix, Nordstrom, Under Armour, Hilton. These are all brands that you've heard of, where their ads ran on, not because they wanted them to run on extreme. They just say, hey, put me in front of people that are gonna, and these extremist channels are on there, and these ads, and so it's a symbol of how integrated that this has become, and this is all fairly recent. It's how integrated all of this has become. What should be happening is everybody should be speaking out against this. This should not be conservative v. progressive. It's hate, pure and simple, and everybody should be speaking out against it. Unfortunately, it's the two sides right now. Those who see this as repulsive and are responding to it, and then, of course, those that are completely okay with it.
Harry Truman once said, and I'll leave you with Harry Truman, that he always hoped that the political parties would each have liberals and conservatives in them, that not all the liberals would end up in one party and all the conservatives in another, because then you would just have, as he put it, two armed opposing camps. And that's exactly what we have right now.
I believe, honestly, much as I rail against conservatives in this show, I believe honestly that there are good people of every race, gender, religion, ethnicity, political. I believe that there are good people everywhere. But so much tribalism has brought us to this point where that's my side and what they do is okay, and that's your side and whatever they do is wrong. And when I speak out against this kind of hate, whatever, liberal, right? Effing liberal and they're liberal, blah, blah, blah. And it's almost, so what? We expect that from you. So I can only do so much. What would really help is if conservatives began speaking out against this kinds of hate. This kind of hate with regard to race, this kind of hate with regard to gender, and this kind of hate with regard to sexual orientation. I know that there are gay conservatives. And even with that, there are a lot of gay conservatives that still voted for one Donald Trump. Headline. Realtor group pulls support from GOP rep over comments about selling to LGBT homebuyers. So this is about Rohrabacher, a Republican representative from California. Quoting here from a story about The Hill, Rohrabacher reportedly told a member of the National Association of Realtors and National Association of Gay and Lesbian Real Estate Professionals that he didn't believe in extending fair housing protections to the LGBT people in a meeting earlier this week. Quoting here, a person who owns their home, they have a right to choose who they do business with. This is what Rohrabacher told the Orange County Register. We've drawn a line on racism, but I don't think that we should extend that line to the LGBT community. He actually said this week. If you don't want to sell your house to a gay homosexual, then you should not have to do that. And I suppose it's up to you who you sell your house to. And there's really not a good way to police this, to govern this. But a quick tip. If somebody says this, they should not be getting your vote. If somebody stands behind that, Jeff Flake is doing this thing right now where he's speaking out pretty harshly against Trump, just all the time. But he's continuing to vote with him. Yes, he's leaving the Senate this year, largely in protest to Trump. But while he's there, he continues to vote with this guy. Profiles in Courage, it is not. And just real quick, I want to make sure to cover this before we move on to our next subject. The tax bill, right? It would seem that the real agenda of the president would have to do with sexism and racism and homophobia, because a lot of stuff is being accomplished on those particular fronts. But what everyone said when they voted for the guy, and even after he became president, they voted for him for economic reasons. He's going to bring us the jobs. He's going to raise the wages, so on and so forth. So how in the hell is that going? I want you to think real quick. Think of the quintessential American company. When you think of a company that's just got the name America written all over it, what do you think of? You think of Levi's jeans? They're made in Mexico. What about Budweiser? You think Budweiser's American? They even named their beer America. Over the summer, drink a can of America. InBev, they're not owned by America anymore. Think of a real gruff American. Think of Eagles, right? Think of Eagles. Think of Fat Boys. Think of Roadsters. Think of Harleys. When you think of an American company, right? Especially one that Paul Ryan went there. When they were trying to get this tax bill passed, he went to the Harley factory and he goes, pass this bill, jobs for everybody, money for everybody, bolster in the America. This quintessential American company, Harley Davidson. They've got eagles on everything. Can you think of anything more patriotic than Harley effing Davidson?
This is a Road Glide rear fender.
Tim Primo had worked for Harley Davidson for 17 years when he got the stunning news.
Disbelief. A lot of people, you can see it on everybody's faces, that they were just in shock.
The company told workers in January it was shutting down this plant in Kansas City, relocating hundreds of jobs to Pennsylvania, eliminating 350 jobs entirely. It's not the news Primo expected when President Trump pitched slashing corporate taxes.
I think it's going to be a tremendous thing for our country, for the workers.
And House Speaker Paul Ryan went to a Harley plant in Wisconsin.
Harley Davidson on a much better footing to compete in the global economy and keep jobs here in America.
Harley soon announced a nearly $700 million stock buyback plan to reward shareholders. But the company says the buyback authorization and a separate decision to open a facility in Thailand are unrelated to tax reform. It calls calls the closing of its Kansas City plant a tough decision. Domestic sales are down, and it was based on our need to address the excess capacity we have in the U.S.
Now, we got lost in the shuffle. They just threw us out on the streets.
The tax law has brought benefits, including companies announcing bonuses and raising their minimum wages. But a CNBC survey found that only 10 companies in the S&P 100 say they have specific plans to use the savings to boost worker pay.
Corporate profits are much higher this year than they were last year. They're up about 25%.
While some workers say they feel left behind, Tim Primo says he still supports the president.
I believe the company more than the president.
But he's now looking for a new job. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Kansas City, Missouri.
But they're still with the president. They still believe in him. His vision. So what has happened with this money? They said some wages have been raised. It's not even measurable at this point. Some bonuses, right? Your company, say like Walmart, give $1,000 to every employee. It's a couple million bucks, right? But they got billions in tax breaks. A lot of companies did nothing with it. They just threw it on top of the pile. And others did a lot of stock buybacks. The irony and the thing that a lot of folks don't understand when it comes to economics is it costs a lot of money to move a company, to shut down a company, open up a company someplace else. And when they got this tax break, that gave Harley Davidson the money not to hire more people, not to increase production, not to innovate, not to raise wages. What it actually gave them, as you'll hear Professor Wolf describe in this next clip, that gave them the money that they needed in order to finish moving Harley Davidson out of America.
Well, here the irony is so rich that it's hard not to dwell on it. The people at Harley Davidson themselves have admitted that part of the reason they made the decision now to close the original Wisconsin factory was because the tax cut gave them a lovely windfall. It's always expensive when you close one facility and open another one. So the tax cut, far from keeping them here, actually lubricated the process of moving them away and in the process cutting half the jobs.
So what is the ultimate objective of the Trump presidency? What is the ultimate objective of the United States Republican Party? When you consider the number of votes that they get, it would seem that they really believe in what's going on, the American dream. But when you see what's actually playing out from their policies, it would seem, and I don't want to go out on a limb here, but it would seem that they only seem to be serving themselves. And they themselves, they don't see themselves as Americans. They see themselves as millionaires. Millionaires that don't have enough money and little more.
But since Election Day, we've created 3 million new jobs. 3 million. If you're a woman and Hispanic or a woman and African American, you're really doing well, right? That means you're really doing well.
I suppose at least they're consistent. So we were hammering 700,000 jobs a month when George W. Bush left office, 700,000 a month. And the conservative media said that was clearly his fault because the world was so freaked out about Obama becoming president. And 3 million jobs created since Election Day because he became president on Election Day. And of course, they passed a budget immediately once he became, nope, same trajectory. So much of this is just smoke and mirrors. You know, and just playing the game, saying the right thing, just kind of throwing stuff up in front of you and going, look at this, look how great this is, right? And trying to play like there's not a whole lot of racism here when there clearly is. So there's an article over at Newsweek And I just thought that this worked on so many levels. The headline, three Lamborghinis outside a major U.S. Bitcoin conference were just a promotion. Quoting here, a trio of Lamborghinis turn heads while parked outside a cryptocurrency conference taking place in New York. Just a heads up, they were not owned by millionaire investors, but were instead placed there by a digital currency exchange as part of an attention-grabbing promotion. So, there's this convention in New York for cryptocurrency. The most notable one, the most famous one that everyone knows about is Bitcoin. The one that's worth the most is Bitcoin. But it's not that hard to start your own digital currency. Really, anybody with a little bit of knowledge can do it. It's not going to make your cryptocurrency valuable, but there is now a cryptocurrency market. I have an app on my phone that allows me to follow what's happening with stocks and bonds and commodities and things of that nature. Our stock market, the European stock market, the Asian stock market, it's all there. And then on its own page is all the cryptocurrency. A number of months back, cryptocurrency, the biggest one, Bitcoin, hit 20,000. And I remember talking with a gentleman in a bar that just believed it was just going to go up, 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 and up. And it's speculative. And people started buying at the high. It's somewhere back around 8,700 right now. But the folks that benefit from selling it, in the world of cryptocurrency especially, I mean, at all, a Lamborghini is just a status symbol. But in the world of cryptocurrency, they call them Lambos. And it's the ultimate symbol that you have made it. And so what they did was outside of this meeting that they were having, this convention that they were having for cryptocurrency, the people that were putting it on rented these three Lamborghinis and they put it out in front, and they were able to extract somewhere between $1,500 and $3,000 per ticket for people to come in to the convention and dare to be rich. There are Lambos parked outside. Clearly it's going to happen for us too. It seems that the shysters, the con men, the liars, they're really just having the time of their lives right now. They're getting everything that they want. I dug in to the conservatives a little bit in the last segment. So I'm going to be a little more bipartisan this time. And I'm going to dig into both parties. So the banks, the nation's banks, just had their best quarter ever. God, love it. I remember saying that exact same line about 10 years ago. Man, what happened 10 years ago? It was a major event. It'll come to me. Anyway, they just had their biggest quarter ever, most profitable ever. But we've been told that they're just struggling, scrimping and saving just to run a bank in America. It's so hard. But they just had their best quarter ever. So Congress decided that they had to do something. What are we going to do? Both the Democrats and the Republicans decided to get together this week and agree on something. And what they agreed on was that because banks are having such a tough time making money because of all this strangling regulation, all this job-killing regulation, that they needed to come together and loosen some of that regulation. And what they decided to do was to overturn the Dodd-Frank rules. The Dodd-Frank rules, which were put in after the economic collapse in 2008, so as to make sure that we don't have another economic collapse like that, the two parties came together and they said, we need to get rid of Dodd-Frank. So the way the rules worked, so I'll give you one example. There was one bank in particular that had $210 million worth of exposure, which is how much more exposure they had as related to cash on hand. Okay, so you know, say they got, just for number's sake, you know, say they've got, you know, $1 billion on hand, well, then they can, you know, leverage to one, you know, 0.2 billion. Say one bank that got leveraged to 1.2 billion, that caused the collapse of the bank because they were just way over leveraged. So one of the things that Dodd-Frank did is they said, you can't have that kind of exposure anymore. You can't have more than 50 million extra exposure anymore over whatever you have on hand. You know, so what you have on hand, you have that, and then you've got a little bit extra, another 50 million. You can't have any more than that. And what they did in Congress was they raised that level from 50 million to five times higher. So they said you can have $250 million more in exposure now. That's how much more money you can loan out or bet that you don't have to actually have on hand. And one bank that went completely under had $210 million extra in exposure, and it caused the bank to collapse. So $250, it could kill all the banks. So it's likely not going to, for a couple of reasons. First of all, you haven't heard the word too big to fail in a long time. Get ready, you're going to be hearing it again soon. And then there's this other policy. One of the banks, chief among them, that is using this policy is Wells Fargo. And they don't necessarily plan on asking for a bailout this time when they inevitably collapse. And by the way, they're going to collapse. There's just no two ways about it. They're going to collapse. So what they're going to do is they're going to do what they refer to as a bail-in. Before they start asking the government to bail them out, they're going to use their own depositors' money. And that, and they're this much closer to that reality now that they've got this bill passed. So all the rules, it's official, all the rules that we put in place after 2010 or 2008 to make sure that we do not have another economic collapse. Our memories aren't that short. That damn collapse flipped my life upside down. Congress got together. Now, it was the vast majority of them were Republicans, but it doesn't matter. There were a whole lot of Democrats that bought into this idea too, and they loosened all of the regulations on the banks. And then there's another thing, the tax bill that we were talking about in the last segment. It turns out that the president is absolutely pissed about that tax bill that got. Who the hell signed this tax bill? Because now it's causing tons and tons of debt in the government that he is now the head of.
45 days runs out.
Okay, how could the president be furious about this? He signed it.
Well, you remember he was fuming. He almost didn't sign it.
But here's the thing. It doesn't matter if he was in a bad mood or not. He signed it.
Well, that's my point, which is the right time to get to this would have been when the bill was presented to him. Instead, he signed it. Why are we arguing over something that's a rounding error? Let's move on and start thinking about the 2020 budget, the 2019 appropriations. Let's start dealing with the $1 trillion permanent deficits that have happened during the Trump administration. It was very clear when Congress voted on this omnibus appropriation back on March 23rd, when they approved it and sent it to the White House, that the Trump administration, its legislative director, Mark Short, was heavily involved in negotiations. It was only after the president watched some TV, I won't say which network, watched some TV in which conservative commentators were criticizing him for it, that he changed his mind about what his administration had already agreed to.
All right, I'm going to say that network probably rhymes with schmucks.
So let's go ahead and file this next story under cute/embarrassing. The headline, Republican lawmaker begs the cops to look the other way after a DUI stop. Quoting here, I fight for you guys. This from Raw Story. New Mexico State Representative Monica Youngblood tried to use her charm to persuade a police officer to waive her drunk driving offense. Arrested early Sunday morning, a video shows her tearing up and begging the police officer not to arrest her. She pointed out that I literally fight for you guys. She says when people talk about, and she says this on the video, and it's mad embarrassing. It doesn't matter. She likely won't lose her seat over it because she's a scumbag. But she says when people talk about how you kill unarmed black men, I still stand up for you. Now, I know what you're probably waiting for. You're probably waiting for the clip. I'm not going to play the clip. I watched the video. and it was quite long, 45 minutes. I didn't watch the entire thing. But what I saw was embarrassing. And I still have empathy for some folks, even for a scumbag like that. I watch and I hurt and I can't do it because I hurt for other people. I know that's weak and liberal and Nancy boy of me, but I couldn't even bring myself to cut it because of just how icky it made me feel. I'm not going to revel in her pain. But if it's not bankers, you know, and it's not white supremacists, you know, then it's crooked cops. And I'm wondering what really the United States Republican Party is all about. And more and more these days, they're siding with an absolute an autocrat, a dictator, a white nationalist. And they're all joining in the chorus when it comes to bagging on the media. If there's something that they don't like to hear, if they're not hearing about how effing great they are in the media, then there's clearly something wrong with the media. It doesn't happen in every country. It really just happens in dictatorships and with autocrats. So Trump gave a speech at Davos last year, and I remember this, and he decided to get in front of these people and complain about the media.
As a businessman, I was always treated really well by the press. You know, the numbers speak and things happen, but I've always really had a very good press. And it wasn't until I became a politician that I realized how nasty, how mean, how vicious, and how fake the press can be as the cameras start going off in the background.
It seems like shtick. And he says it so much, and he's so childish about it. You know, he gets booed at Davos. It seems so much like shtick. And to some degree, it kind of is. But we got to look into what he's really thinking when he says this. And it's what we've suspected all along. This comes to us from Leslie Stahl. So Leslie Stahl from CBS News was giving an interview this week. And she talked about this, and she goes, you know, even when the cameras go off, he still bags on how much he hates the media, and everybody's fake, and everybody's stupid, and if you're not praising him, and she goes, and she tells, and I'll play it here, she goes, just give it up. What the hell's, what, are you just, why do you do this? And in this moment of clarity, he says to her exactly why he does this. It has nothing to do with the fact that he thinks that the media is fake or that they're wrong or that they're liars. He points out, hey, if you're not going to praise me, then I'm just going to discredit you.
It's just me and my boss and him. He has a huge office. And he's attacking the press. And there were no cameras. There was nothing going on. And I said, you know, that is getting tired. Why are you doing this? You're doing it over and over, and it's boring, and it's time to end that. You know, you've won the nomination. And why do you keep hammering at this? And he said, you know why I do it? I do it to discredit you all and demean you all, so when you write negative stories about me, no one will believe you.
And he doesn't do it alone. I read one of the most hilarious headlines this week. And it's hilarious to me because I listen, I don't watch a lot of TV, but I listen to CNN and NBC whenever Sarah Huckabee Sanders does her thing where she gets in front of the media and she lies her ass off. And so she was doing an interview this week with Brett Samuels, and the quote, the headline is, Sanders, being called a liar bothers me. And this is stunning. Because this is her only job. Her job is not to inform. Her job is not to help. Her job is to only lie for Donald Trump. Quoting here, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders says it bothers her to think that she thinks that for people to think that she misleads the media. She told the New York Times, she tries to deliver the best and most accurate information at the time that she can. Adding that she has a responsibility to be truthful, blah, blah, blah. And she doesn't like the fact that she's being called a liar. And I think that we are ever closer to losing her in that position, or getting rid of her, as it were. Because that kind of lying, and it should have weighed on her before she even began. But that kind of lying is really, really, well, it might be getting to her, but it's definitely getting to her that people are pointing out that she's lying. And as I've said before, she's finally losing the room.
Two sources told me this week that the reason that Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I watched a briefing today, and it was actually a tragedy. It wasn't even a comedy anymore. It wasn't funny. She took to the briefing, and that room, you can tell when you've lost the room, and she lost the room today.
Yeah.
Today, the room wanted to know why she comes out there and spews BS every day. Yeah. Why does she lie to them every day? And I don't know what their recourse is, but I think they're done reporting on what comes out of that podium, because she's now been a proven liar, proven by her boss. But one of the explanations I heard was that when she goes to the president and asks him about Stormy Daniels, he has three versions of the truth about Stormy Daniels in his own mind, and it's like a buffet. Whichever version he pulls out and hands out is what she gets, and that's what she has to serve in the briefing room.
I must get two or three emails a week from the Trump campaign. And I don't read them. I read them all, but I don't read them all here. And I just, but I like to bring them to you. And so I got the one, this, you know, one of the ones from this week. Melvin! Yes. Congratulations, America. We are now into the second year of the greatest witch hunt in American history. And there is still no collusion, no obstruction, blah, blah, blah. Give me some money, because we can't afford to lose a single patriot. 1 year. It feels like it's starting to build in a big way. And it seems like Mueller is getting closer every day. And there have been dozens of indictments. There are people already doing time because of this investigation. There are people that have turned on the president and turned on his friends. And I know this stuff doesn't seem like it's happening fast enough. But trust me. I follow this stuff mad close. It is happening, and it is growing, and it is bearing fruit.
The president's calling the probe disgusting, illegal, and unwarranted, tweeting, "Congratulations, America. We are now into the second year of the greatest witch hunt in American history." On the Senate floor,
"It's not a witch hunt when 17 Russians have been indicted. It's not a witch hunt when some of the most senior members of the Trump campaign have been indicted."
Democratic leader Chuck Schumer says the president seems afraid of what the probe will find.
It's pretty clear that it's starting to bother him, the things that are being found out. And the fact that he is considering firing his own attorney general, the fact that he's made public statements about how he would have never hired him if he knew this guy was going to recuse himself, the fact that he continues to pressure him to get the hell out of that position because he'd like to fire his way through the Justice Department. This stuff is, and I know when we watch a television show, they solve it all in an hour. We watch a movie, they solve it all in under an hour. You know, even if it's multiple movies, you know, they'll solve it in under 5 hours. And we want it now, now, now. And it's, hey, I'm really watching this stuff build. And it's going to happen. And it might even happen this fall. But a true, good, thorough investigation does not happen inside of an hour. And it's not going to be over by the end of the week. This stuff takes a ton of time. And I think all of these folks, these white supremacists that have decided to go ahead and just come into the light and take their hoods off, and all of these people that have decided to stick with the president, though he's breaking the law and lying, you know, and all these folks that have identified with him and his white supremacy and his law breaking and his theft and all of these things, I think that things get worse before they get better. And I feel like it's absolutely all coming to a head. Be patient. And it's not going to be the Republican Party that solves it. It's not going to be the Democratic Party that resolves it. It's going to be you. It's going to be your attention, your engagement, your action. And it doesn't matter who you are. You're not defined by the label that carries you. And you should never let it be that way. Tribalism should have never, ever come into this. All it takes is a good person to say something, to do something, and get involved. And I don't care who you are. If you don't want to be on the wrong side of history, you need to be involved and you need to be that person.
I said, hey, science and innovation is a great thing. You should be a leader who drives innovation. And that conversation was about a broad set of things in energy, in health, in education. You know, pick things you want to do that are big. HIV vaccine, you could, you know, accelerate that. Be associated with innovation. And then the second time I saw him was the march after that. So March 2017 in the White House. Both times he wanted to know if there was a difference between HIV and HPV. So I was able to explain that those are rarely confused with each other.
So that was Bill Gates talking about getting in front of President Trump and trying to get the president to associate himself less with the things that he has been associating himself with. Racism, white supremacy, oligarchy, and try to get him associating himself with health and science instead. It's a very powerful position, the position of presidency, and you really could do good things. And Bill points out there, Bill Gates points out that both times he met with him, 1 year apart, he had to point out to the president, this is a real thing. Start lies right now. He had to point out to the president that there's a difference. Not only is there a difference between HIV and HPV, but better than that, those two things are rarely confused. So I wanted to end today's show on a bit of a different note. With the way science is being absolutely tortured right now, and dismissed and all the rest, I wanted to bring you some real science that you might be able to use in your life. So this from Science Daily, the headline, holding hands can sync brain waves and ease pain, according to study. So quoting here, reach for the hand of a loved one in pain, and not only will your breathing and heart rate synchronize with theirs, your brainwave patterns will couple up too, according to a study published in the PNAS, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The study by researchers with the University of Colorado Boulder and University of Haifa also found that the more the empathy a comforting partner feels for a partner in pain, the more the brain waves fall into sync. And the more those brain waves sync and the more the pain goes away. And we live in a society right now where there's very little human interaction. I had some house guests over the weekend, and I can't tell you how many times I looked over their shoulder, and I saw them all sitting on social media. And I had both house guests point out to me at different times about how they thought it was crazy that they were commenting on each other's posts that they had made on Facebook, even though they were in the same room together. So there's this thing where we believe that with social media, it's helping us make connections and it's helping bring us closer together. But magically, there we are in the same room, not interacting with one another by talking or by sharing a touch, but by staring down and talking into this digital world. And I found this study especially because we've lost so much human interaction with technology. And with every technology, we lose more and more human interaction. And what we've done now is we've begun medicating more. We medicate with drugs, and we medicate, you know, with pharmaceuticals, and we medicate with alcohol and all these other things. And what's in this study is it talks about how your breathing will sync up, how your pulse will sync up. And now we know from this new study that your brain waves, just from touching, your brain waves will actually sync up. And I just want to point out, I mean, you know that when you hold someone's hand when you're in pain, how much better it gets, you know, for you and for them, and it helps. I know, I've done it before too. I've got no problem admitting that. But now we have the science that says it's not just, it's everything. It's your breathing, it's your brain, everything. And I just don't want us to lose that. And I castigate, you know, my friends and my daughters and my wife about, you know, there's technology and social media. Hell, I'm using technology to record the show now. And I just want to make sure that we realize the importance of that human touch, that skin-to-skin human touch. And I realize how much we need that. And that not everything is going to be fulfilled, you know, by money or by getting wasted or being on social media or having a million followers on Twitter or whatever. And that what you really need, what's really going to help, what's really going to extend your life, what's really going to make you feel better, and what's really going to matter after all, after it's all over, what's really going to matter is how you treated the people around you. And what you're really going to remember when you're passing into the next world and when you're walking into the light, what you're really going to remember are those human interactions. And they should increase, and you should have more of them. And you should have as many of them as you can while they're here, while you're here. Because they're not just good for you. And they're not just good for your body and your brain. They're good for the world at large. And I'm sorry to get all sappy and stupid with you, but I don't want us to lose touch of what's really important here. All right, I'm out of here. Thank you for being here. The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home, tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. Speaking of social media, you can find us on the Podbean app. You know, you can find us at the iTunes store. Individual episodes are available. You know, just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. You want to write to me, say something you don't like what I got to say? TFYCPO@gmail.com. We work hard to not only... I'm not going to give you a phone number. And I'm not going to let you touch me either. If I see you in public, I'll touch you fine. But hey, not like that now. All right. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We're The Fire You Can't Put Out. And we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Gavin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I have woken you up, good morning.